terms of the draft, obviously, most of the times you want to have players that you project maybe in a couple of years they're going to be starters or whatever it may be. How important is it this year with the way you guys have your roster shaped to draft guys that can come in and contribute immediately?
You try to find the best players. You know, that's what you try to do in the draft. We have some needs, obviously, that we need to address. You know, the board's got to fall the right way. Needs are paramount, but we're going to stick with our formula and draft the best players available.
Does it matter if they're a player that might not necessarily be able to contribute right away, or are you trying to get guys that can get in here faster and actually be on the field?
Well, most of the time, you know, there isn't that big a separation between a need and in another position, right? So when in doubt, you're going to take the need if it's close, obviously. If there's a great distance between the two, you got to weigh that out, you know. And usually what we've done in the past is stick with the formula, take the best player available. Now, again, if it's close, we're going to take the higher need.
Trent, feel more comfortable with the roster, with what you guys were able to accomplish in free agency? And Doug, if you want to address that too.
Yeah, I think you try to address needs in free agency, and you try to attack it that way. The less needs you have going into the draft, the better, obviously, because it allows you to then stick to that formula of drafting the best player available. But, you know, we feel comfortable. You know, I think, and Coach can speak on that too. We feel comfortable with where we're at, but we got a ways to go.
You know, I look at it too the same. You know, the first thing we try to do every offseason is try to re-sign our own guys, right? That's kind of the priority there, and then look outside the building, you know, to fill, as Trent was saying, to fill those immediate needs possibly there, and then obviously this third bucket is the draft. And so you feel good with the guys you got in the building because you were able to, you know, answer a couple of questions, and now you know, heading into next week, you feel now you're just adding more talent and more depth and the competition that as coaches we look for as we continue to build.
Dealing with positions of need that you have, and it just so happens to line up that it might be a deep group of players at those positions, does that complicate things in terms of what you want to do? You know, can you afford to wait a little bit more? Does it make you want to wait a little bit more, or, you know, before you grab one of those positions, or how does that?
Well, it's more comforting to know there's depth at a position where you have a need, because it gives you multiple opportunities within different levels of the draft. You know, and sometimes you're splitting hairs, and sometimes the guy that you got a little more value to doesn't play up to or doesn't play as well as the guy you got right behind him. So, you know, there's a little luck involved as well. But we feel good about where the board's at now. We feel good about where our needs lie and where what the board's shaping up to look like. So, you know, now we just got to wait and play it out.
Trent, how do you feel about the talent pool in this year's draft? Is this a draft where you feel like you can get a guy on day or two, day three? I mean,
yeah, I think it's no different than most drafts. I think there's talent at all levels. You just got to find them, you know. And a lot of finding them is fit. A lot of finding them is opportunity. You know, giving them an opportunity once you get them, you know, on your program within the organization. So, I think it's no different. I like this group of players coming in. It's a little bit older. It's an older group because of the COVID situation and guys that went back for their fifth, 6 years of college. So that's a little different for us.
Trent, you mentioned how the board falls and how that can affect the approach. Is there a unique aspect to this class with the quarterback class at the top and maybe the amount of teams that are looking into that and how it could affect the board?
Well, when you don't need a position and it's heavy at a position like it is with quarterbacks, and, you know, four or five are more than likely going to go off before we pick at 17, you know, that's a good thing, you know, because that leaves the position players or more position players available for us, you know. But again, you don't know what's going to happen 1 through 16. You know, you think you got an idea, you go in with a pretty good idea what it looks like and what your options might be, you know, whether that's three or four players we're looking at right now. We're not there yet. You know, we still got a couple of days going through. Coach and I haven't sat down and gone through the final board yet. We'll do that on Monday. But we like how it's shaping up, but we still got some work to do.
Do you treat the offensive line differently than, say, defensive line, where it's natural to rotate guys for keeping everybody fresh? But with the offensive line, you don't really want to do that. You want more continuity. How do you approach that position in the draft differently from, say, wide receiver, DB, or defensive line?
I don't know if we address it differently. You know, you got guys that you rate as starters and guys that you have rated as backups. With a chance to develop, depending on what depth of the draft you're looking at. You know, it is easier to get the defensive players on the field, the D-line on the field first or earlier, because you can get them in a rotation, like you say. A lot more difficult to do that with O-linemen. So usually those back-end guys, the eighth, ninth guy, sometimes the teams that carry 10, Philly carries 10 a lot of times, you know, the ninth, tenth guy, they're not gonna get much playing time unless somebody goes down. Really there for developmental reasons. So it's a little bit unique in that way.
When you look at your position at 17, which is, you know, the middle of the first round is one of the areas where the Jaguars have really never drafted before. Do you feel like, given what your needs are and what's available and that 17th position, that there's probably a wider net for you to cast in terms of the options, whether it's trade up, trade down, stay put?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot, as you know, that goes into it. You know, we feel good about the group that's there, you know, and at different positions, you know, that we're focused in on a little bit. But you don't know what's going to happen. You really aren't going to know what we're going to do until maybe the 12th or 13th pick. You know, and then we'll look at the opportunity to potentially move up. You know, and if we get to 16 like we did last year, and somebody calls and there's a chance to move back one or two, you know, you just don't know. It's you're playing it on game day.
Doug, a couple of guys that last year were hurt, Ventrell and Cooper. Where are they right now, and do you anticipate them being able to make a contribution this year?
Both guys are doing extremely well. You know, both have been here rehabbing and did a nice job during the season to get themselves in a position to you know, perform this spring. And you know, they're here in the building. They'll be able to get on the grass with us, you know, in phase two, and then obviously during OTAs in phase three. And it'll be a big opportunity for both those guys, because I thought at the end of camp, both guys were really trending in the right direction for us, you know, to potentially help. And you know, so we'll see where they are. But they're healthy. They're ready to get back on the grass and you know, see where we can plug them in and contribute. And again, give us, as we talk about, give us the depth that we're looking for at both of those positions.
And if you throw Tyler and Yasir into the mix, did this guy essentially have a redshirt year? And did they use that? All of them use that time to, you know, in the best way they could to get better and improve, and, you know.
Exactly. And, you know, Yasir probably falls in, you know, probably more with Coop and Ventrell in a way, even though he was healthy, you know, in practice and all that. And unfortunately, he didn't get much time, you know, on the grass during the regular season. But and then Tyler did, you know, and we've got to continue. All four of those guys, we got to continue their growth and development this spring and make sure that they're in a position to help us.
Brent, how do you look at the receivers in this draft? Everybody's talking about those top three guys. Is that how you see it, separation there? And then how deep does the class go for you?
I think it's a very good group of receivers, obviously. I think those three that everybody's talking about are really good football players. I think there's some guys in that next wave that are really good football players too. And I think there's good players all the way through the draft at that position. There's going to be some later round guys that make a mark for themselves at some point in their careers in this league as well. So it's a good group. There's a lot of variations of guys strictly in the slot, guys strictly out on the perimeter. There are some guys that can move around the formations a little bit more. So it's a good group of receivers.
If it comes down to 17th pick, let's say you do not trade up, but you wait till it's your time to pick, and there's two guys that you like a lot. Does it go strictly, do you go strictly by your value board in that instance and say, hey, this is where we had them?
I think we do what we did last year. Just look at each other, flip a coin, and take one. But no, Gene, I think, when it's very similar, you're going to go with the need, right? What's the need pick? You know, if there's two players at competing positions and you say, okay, what's the higher need? They're both good football players. We like them both. They both fit our culture. Everything equal, go with the guy that's going to get on the field first.
So you would take the need over the, if the other guy had better value, but the other guy was a bigger need, you would still go with the need guy?
As long as there's a very similar, when you talk about what's the difference in value, is it minimal? Is it one space on the board? I mean, if it's a two rounds on the board, no, we're going with the better player. But if they're both in the first round and we feel good about both of them and everything else is equal, culture, if a football IQ, all that stuff, go with the need.
You mentioned culture. When you're building that draft board, how important is the person for where the players kind of slot?
Very important. You know, I think you look at this roster and you look at it since the coach and I have been together, the locker room's good. You know, we place an emphasis on leadership. We're a young group. You still, you know, we focused on that, you know, as we went into the off season, especially in free agency, type of guys that we brought in here, guys that from winning programs that are used to winning, that are used to leading and being a part of that championship run, you know, and we're looking for players that have similar characteristics as we move forward.
When you're building this team, do you take into consideration what's going on in the division, since obviously that's the goal, right? I mean, you got to beat those people in your division in order to advance into the postseason. I mean, do you say, all right, we need these kind of players to beat Tennessee, to beat Indianapolis, to beat Houston? I mean, is that, as you build the roster through all the different moving parts?
You know, you're gonna pay close attention to your division, obviously, and see what's going on. And we saw, you know, last year in the division, I mean, you know, there were three brand new quarterbacks that were taken, right, in the division. So you pay close attention to that and you know, some of the free agent moves that were made even in this offseason, right, and some of the things and the decisions that are – and they're looking at us the same way, you know. And you know, we have to construct, you know, the best roster for us and making sure that we have the best 11 offense, defense, and special teams on the field, right? I think, yeah, if you go in and saying, hey, you know, we've got to stop the run, then we need run stoppers, right? If we got to defend the pass, then we need cover guy, you know what I'm saying, or pass rushers. So you're going to take a look at all of that, and but yet we have to focus internally too and make sure that we're putting the best guys for what we're doing, you know, because schematically we're not the same, right, and we do things a little bit different. So building it that way as well, but do we pay attention? We sure do.
Tom Gamble joining the front office, in what role, and how did that hire come about?
Well, Tom and I have been together for a long time, you know, so, and we've been together on three different occasions. You know, he understands the system that we have in terms of the evaluation process. He's a senior personnel executive. He's in all the draft meetings with us. He's in the free agent part of it with us. He's a valued guy. He's been around the league a long time, knows what a good football player looks like, knows what our system is and what we do. So just glad to have him back again.
So he's been here for a while then? Yes, no?
He got back here, I don't know the exact date. He got back here sometime after the national championship. I think sometime in February is when he came on board with us.
Doug, how much does it concern you when you see a team like, you talk about you pay attention about the division, when you see a team like the Colts is drafting two spots ahead of you and at least two of their top three needs seem to dovetail with the needs that you guys have?
You know, it's something you can't control. I mean, it's just the way it falls. Every year it's different, you know, and like I said, you know, we're going to put the best roster together for 2024 and go play football and be competitive. And that's all we can control. We can't control, you know, what happens above us. We can't control what happens behind us. Now, we can control ourselves, right? And as Trent alluded to, we can either move up, move back, whatever. Again, we're gonna pick, you know, pick players that can help us.
Trent, last year you guys picked Anton, Brenton, and Tank, I think in part to help that short yardage power game. This year you re-signed Ezra and obviously bring in Mitch. Do you feel like you're in a good spot now with that short yardage game that's been a little bit of an issue, or can you get more help a week from today?
Was that to me?
Yeah.
Oh.
You call it. I don't know.
I do. I mean, that's something that we've as a staff, we've focused on this offseason so far, and you know, put our finger on some of the whys, you know, why we weren't as good in third and one and fourth and one situations, and all things that are correctable and fixable, and you know, Tank's going to be a part of that. Travis is going to be a part of that. As we know, Ezra will be a part of that, and you know, whether it's Luke or Mitch, they're going to be a part of that. So, you know, we've got a you know, a plan. We're going to stick to our plan. We got to be convicted on it. We've got to, you know, present it to the players the same way, and make the necessary corrections this offseason to, you know, to fix those areas.
Jerry, how do you go from waiting for something to happen like last year? You guys were waiting for that moment where the team really kicked in. How can you force that on the players and have them create those moments as opposed to getting complacent waiting for that?
I think what we've been through the last 2 years, I think these players are understanding that you just can't wait. You can't wait around. You know, we were sitting there at 8-3, and we had a chance to keep our foot on the gas and keep pushing. And, you know, this is why you're seeing some of the players we've gone out and brought to this team. You know, Trent mentioned it. These guys are winners. They've been to the AFC or NFC championship games. They've been deep. You know, Eric was in the Super Bowl, you know, and we need more guys like that, right? We have a young football team, but the culture is heading in that right direction, and just having more guys like that on your roster who've been there, done it, can help the players, right? Even coaches can help the players kind of punch through that wall. And, you know, it's my job to make sure that we continue to push and push hard and you know, get over that hump.
This draft is very comparable to the 2021 draft, your first one here. Obviously different selection, but quarterback heavy. In 2021, the 8th and 9th pick were DBs. The other 10 were offensive players. The mock drafts this year, quarterback heavy, 9 or 10 of the top 10 consistently with these mock drafts, all offense. Can you make a comparison to something just a couple of years ago, or is it totally irrelevant? And what does that say for you if you've identified a defensive guy, have all these offensive players go with maybe just 3 or 4 spots ahead of when you select?
Well, I think in one regard it's totally irrelevant, because what happened back then, who was picking, what were their needs, what was this, you know, what were the true strengths of the draft? I'd have to go back and replay that in my head. I don't worry about what happened in 2021. I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen in 23 or 24 here. Again, we can't control what happens in front of us. You know, whatever happens, happens. The only thing we can control is be calculated on. If we really target someone and we really feel we need to make a run, let's say get up to 12, get up to 13, get up to, you know, we'll be prepared to do that if the right person's there. And look at the other side, like we did a year ago, trade back twice and get the same player. You know, there's so many things that can happen. You got to go in prepared, but the board's going to fall the way it falls. You can't change that. So you just got to be ready for everything.
Trey, how much more of a temptation, if that's the right word, is it to try to move up from your 96th spot in the third round or your 48th in the second round, knowing you probably won't have to sacrifice as much draft capital to move up as you would if you went from, like, 17 to 11 or 12.
Well, if you talk to the analytics people, they'll tell you never move up, right? Acquire as many darts as you can, keep moving back. You just got to look at the board and let the board speak. I mean, we've spent 360 some days putting this thing together, and to try to make something happen enforce something to happen sometimes backfires on you, right? You chase something that and it doesn't pan out, so you lose out there, and then you lose out on the guy that you would have picked, or the two guys you would have picked with the other picks you gave up. So if you're going to move up, you better be right.
When you look at the cornerback group, is there much separation between some of the top guys?
I think it's a good group. I think there's, you know, I think if you looked at 32 boards, you'd probably find 28 different ways to stack the top 10 corners in this draft. You might find 32 different ways. I think it's that close. I think there's good value. They're good players. The makeup and character of these guys is all different. It's all over the board. You know, it's going to be interesting how that group falls off the board on draft day.
Trent, Trevor Lawrence talks about there's been some conversations with his contract extension. You know, looking back at some of the other quarterbacks in their fourth year, they've signed their extension in the offseason. So would you like to have that signed before the season starts, or is there any rush for his extension?
You know, again, I try not to force anything. You know, we've had some great talks, some great conversations. I spoke with his agency again last night. You know, we're working. You know, but you can't force this stuff. You know, I said the same thing with Josh's situation. I said it would take some time. It did. But we were glad that it got completed when it did, so we could go into this off-season program knowing that that's behind us and we can move forward. So we're working at it. We'll continue to work at it. You know, ownership's involved, obviously. Coaches involved. We're going to put our best foot forward and hope to get something accomplished here.
Football IQ scouting perspective, how do you scout that portion of a prospect and score it? And from a coaching perspective, what are you comfortable with what you hear from a prospect when it comes to football IQ?
Well, you do a lot of work. You know, you do a lot of work. You talk to a lot of people. You look at the film. The film will tell you some. It'll certainly speak to you about the player's instincts, which is part of the football IQ, obviously, and a big part of the football IQ. We Zoom call these guys, we send coaches to workouts, we send coaches to meet with them, we bring them in on the 30 visit, we get in front of them as much as we can. Every opportunity we get a chance to talk to a guy that we have concerns about, we do. We interview them at the combine, we interview them at the All-Star games, we interview them at their pro days. We get as much time in front of them as we can. The coaches make calls to the coaches that work with these players. You know, you gather as much as you can. You know, and usually, by the time you get to the draft, you got them pretty well figured out from that perspective. And sometimes guys come in and they fool you. You know, and you can't just use test scores to say a guy can learn or can't learn. That doesn't work. There's guys that have had low test scores that learn extremely well. There's guys that have had high test scores that don't learn very well when it comes to football. So you just got to do your homework.
How much does Tom help you with that, Tom Gamble, being that he was just in that recruiting world and he may know a lot of those kids ever since they were in high school?
Well, that helps. And we got some coaches that we brought on board from the college game that have spent a lot of time with a lot of these guys in the recruiting process, whether they've coached them directly or recruited them. So that gives you some insight as well. So you just use every opportunity and every resource you have to try to figure these guys out.
Hey guys, we have about 5 or 6 minutes left, so let's go.
During the pro day circuit, you had a lot of your coaches that were leading the workouts for some of these guys. What is it? Does that help that you have those guys with the practical on-field experience leading the workouts for some of the evaluation?
Well, at most of the universities, they let the pro guys take over the workouts. There's certain big schools that want their coaches to handle the workouts, but for the majority of the workouts we go to the coaches, the NFL coaches that are there. If there's a position coach there, and they're going to work that position out, and they're putting them through, you know, drills that they're going to be put through on a daily basis once they get to the league. But most of the time, it's drills these guys have been doing since they were 14 years old or whatever.
Trent, how does the new kickoff rule affect roster building, if at all? And Doug, if you don't mind answering, just do you like the rule, and what's the challenge from a coaching perspective?
Well, from a roster perspective, you know, obviously you're going to have two returners back there. You know, so having two really good returners helps you a lot because they can't kick it away from the one that's back there. So that's going to be something that you have to deal with. I think, you know, when you talk to the special team coaches, getting guys that can button release, you know, press and release, get off of blocks quickly, strike and go is going to be important. So I think you're going to see some bigger bodies. More bigger bodies involved in it, if I were to guess. But I think, you know, for the most part, bringing the kickoff back into the play is going to help the guys, you know, the team's guys especially, you know, when you build the roster with linebacker-type players.
You know, I like the rule. I think it's going to bring excitement back to our game. There were close to 2,000 kickoffs last year and you know, 21-22% were returned, where back in, you know, 2010 we were up to about 80%, you know, almost 90% returnable, you know, kicks. So it's going to bring some excitement back to the football game. You know, as Trent mentioned, the dual returners back there, it's going to look different. You know, it's going to look a little awkward at first. It's going to take some getting used to. I mean, you know, Heath Farwell, Luke Thompson, special teams guys here are really diving into the X's and O's, and to Trent's point, I think you're going to see bigger athletic guys, you know, that are especially on the return team that can run and move, and because they're going to be a little bit closer together, and being able to block a little bit faster. So, you know, we're working through all those things right now. This spring is going to be important for us as we dive into, you know, the next phase 2 and phase 3, and really kind of iron out our own design, you know, and figure out who our two guys, you know, back there and what it's going to look like.
Back to Justin. Trent, when you're talking about exploring a trade up into the draft, into maybe the top 10, do you have these placeholder type discussions with teams beforehand of the draft, or do you wait until you get on the clock to actually start seeing how that falls?
Well, we know who's willing to move, and we've had preliminary discussions on what that looks like, what it's going to cost to move up there. You know, I'm not a big believer in moving before draft day, you know, because what are you moving for? You know, the guy, unless you know exactly who you're moving for and you know that he's going to be there, which is impossible to know, you know, why move? Unless you're going to number one. That's the only guarantee, right? Number one, that you'd have your choice. So you have exploratory conversations. You know what it's going to take you to get to the 12 or 13 or 14 or 15 or whatever the number is. And then you wait till draft day to figure out whether you're going to do it or not.
Now, when you first got here a few years ago, you guys hadn't worked together before. Do you have more input now than you did that first year, less? And how has the trust between you guys and the front office developed over time?
I'll tell you something. It as far as, you know, our involvement as a staff, myself, it's the best I've been around. It's one of the things that Trent really has been open to, you know, the evaluation process from the coaches, right? And he understands the coaching side of it as well as the scouting side of it. And the involvement has been, you know, it's the same every year. It's probably even gotten a little bit more, you know, just the more comfortable that we are working together. You know, it takes everybody, you know, to put a roster together, and it's not about one guy making all the decisions, right? And so there's a lot of input. He values what the coaches say and how the coaches rank and stack players, just like, you know, we appreciate what the scouts do because they're the ones that are out there, you know, every single day scouting these players. So it's been a really good process, and one that as a coach, you know, you can really appreciate.
Trent, you said earlier you seem to agree with the idea that the top three receivers have had a little bit of separation with whoever's next. Do you feel the same way about the cornerbacks, that the top two have created a little bit of separation from the others, or is it just a matter of beauty being in the eye of the beholder?
I think a little bit of that. I think system, right? I think system plays an important role in that as well. You know, how are you going to play the corners? You're going to play them off man? You're going to play them on the line of scrimmage and press and run with guys? So I do think that plays into it. I think, again, I think there's a really good depth and really good skill at the corner position in this draft, more so than maybe the last couple drafts, you know, that I've been involved with here. So it'll be interesting how these top guys fall off the board.
Trent outlined how much time and money and investment there is basically all year long to get to next Thursday. From your perspective as a player and then as an assistant and obviously as a head coach, then what goes wrong when you miss on a guy or a guy doesn't fit the way that you thought? Is there a thread that runs through all of that, or is it individually just sometimes, is there something that just doesn't work sometimes?
Yeah, it you're going to be wrong at times. You know, you do everything you can to be right. You know, Trent's already talked about it. But are you going to make a mistake? Yeah, you're going to make a mistake. You know, it happens, right? But the key is not to make too many mistakes. And that's why there's so much time spent in this process, and there's so much dialogue and so much film and on the road and just the process itself. And all 32 clubs are going through the same thing. But will you miss on a player from time to time? You will. And like I said, it's just a matter of just minimizing those opportunities, maximizing the ones you have, and then developing those guys so that they can help you come November, December, January, and ultimately into February.
You've talked about, you know, coaches collaborating with you guys in the personnel department. How much has Ryan Nielsen and his staff sort of maybe changed at all what you guys might look for as far as traits or anything as far as these players in the draft?
Well, there's a definite change. You're going from a 30 to a 40. You know, what he's looking for at the end position is different than we were looking for, you know, in the last scheme. So there's definitely a change, but it's a change I'm very familiar with. So it's been good. You know, Ryan and his staff, you know, we've had very good dialogue. We spent a lot of time when he first got here going through exactly what he was looking for at the different positions, how we were going to play the corners in this scheme versus how we played them in the past, how the linebackers were going to fit and how we were going to get the Sam linebacker position filled from within. You know, so we had a lot of great dialogue, you know, and it's been fun to learn what he's looking for in players. He comes from, you know, he was with Coach Payton, and that goes back to Coach Parcells. So the traits that he's looking for, I'm very familiar with, obviously. So it's been good.
All right, wrap it up here.
Trent, this offensive line class has kind of been lauded. Does it live up to the hype in your eyes?
Yeah, I think it's a very good group. You know, and again, it's a group that, whether it's inside or outside, I think there's great value throughout the draft. I think you're going to find starters in the fourth, fifth round, you know, that are eventually going to find their way into starting. And there's always some guys that even go later than that. You know, I was telling the group yesterday, the local workout guys, and most people don't realize that there's more guys in the Football Hall of Fame that were undrafted free agents than there are first round picks. You know, so good players come from all levels of the draft and even the undrafted. And I think we just got to remember that. It takes time. These guys, they've got to be given time to develop.